Hello, everybody. This is Radio Johnny, and you are listening to Recovery Radio on KRFP 90.3 FM, the coolest station in the nation. Well, at least in Moscow Pullman. And Recovery Radio is an outreach of the Latah Recovery Center, located at 531 South Main Street in Moscow. You can reach the LRC by phone at 208-883-1045 or by email at latahrecoverycenter@gmail.com. You can find them on the web at latahrecoverycenter.org and on Facebook. And Recovery Radio's mission is to share with our community how substance abuse disorder and behavioral health problems affect us all and how we deal with them. And today in the studio slash conference room with me again is Miss Denise. Hello, Denise.
Hello. Hello, everyone.
And today we're going to jump into a topic that is near and dear to both of us, and that's the higher power thing, the God thing, the G word that frightens so many people in recovery, but seems to be so essential to my recovery, at least. I'll kick it off. My higher power, I call God of my non-understanding, because the more I try and nail down what this higher power, this God is to me and in my life, the more confused I get. So it's best that I don't try and overthink it. It's something that I rely on for answers in times of confusion or frustration or just not knowing what to do in a particular situation. And for some reason, I always seem to get an answer. I don't get that burning bush thing where God speaks to me through, the burning bush deal. But I do get answers through a lot of my peers in the program, sometimes random people on the street, but I just have to pay attention to it, so that's kind of the essence of it. But Denise, you have a very well-defined higher power. Why don't you share a little bit about that?
I do. So I believe in God, the Father, and the Holy Spirit that lives within me from accepting Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior, and the relationship and the way that I seek to understand more through His Word is definitely an active part of my life, and it's been also very crucial to my recovery. I did start out in a secular program here in Latah, the Latah drug court program, which is amazing and so very helpful. And I did believe in God as I was growing up and things like that. I don't think that we attended church very much past the age of seven. So before that, there was some church involved, and my grandmother was a pretty strong believer in Jesus and would do these really cool cards for me when it was birthdays or holidays, and she would write scripture in them, and she would said money and things, and so it was always just really, really special and encouraging. And she was the person that was a big example in my life of her faith. And my mom is also a believer as well. And when I got into recovery 11 years ago, about a year in, I got baptized at my church, and it's just kind of been ongoing since then. I spend time at Restoration Night, taking classes, and just really spending time with fellow believers and stuff. And it's just been a really big part of my journey and honestly growing as a person, because I've struggled with a lot of what people call like character defects and different kinds of things. I don't know. I'm thinking right now that I would just call it being human. And so it's been really good to be able to look to God's Word and the example that He gives to just try to love on people and be a better person and be patient and forgiving. And that has really served me pretty well in being able to continue to let go of substances. And I quit smoking 5 years ago. And there's just been a lot of things that I've been able to overcome. And I really think that my community of friends and family and things in my faith community has been crucial in that. And yeah, God's just an active part in my life. And I know he cares for me and looks after me and guides me.
Yeah, that's, you know, not too far off of, you know, the way I look at God myself, you know. I know for a fact that the fact that I survived my adolescence and young adulthood is pretty amazing. We used to do things like go into these train tunnels and wait in the little cubby holes that are only feet away from the tracks and wait for trains to come into the tunnel and then race between the cubby holes to see if you could beat the train. And I'm quite certain, you know, it was a guardian angel that, you know, moved that stick out of the way so we didn't trip over it, fall down, and get killed by a train.
You just blew up my brain.
Yeah.
I do not understand why young boys do some of the things that they do. And maybe girls do when they're young too, but.
Oh, we had girls with us.
Never, oh, yeah. Yeah, that would have never occurred to me to do, but I guess I didn't have train tracks by my house.
That's right. That's right. Well, we actually
you've never mentioned that, Johnny.
we actually had to travel to get to the train. I mean, it was an event. It's like, let's go catch a train. Okay.
Oh my goodness. Well, I suppose that was very adventurous.
And yeah, and there are always substances involved in
okay,
that as well.
Okay, it's making more sense.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So
I'm glad you made it through that too.
Yes, yes. Well, and a multitude of other crazy adventures. I was talking through them with a close friend of mine who went through a lot of that stuff with me the other day. And yeah, he's a big believer in Jesus Christ. And, you know, he's thankful every day, you know, for the same reason. It's like, dude, there's no good reason for us to be here other than that God had some other plan for us.
He loves his children.
And so I can't let them die just yet. Despite their efforts, you know, to the contrary. And that's, you know, when I first came into Alcoholics Anonymous and they told me it's a spiritual program of action, I was a little bit, how would I put it? A little bit apprehensive about it. I didn't have a problem with the idea of God or whatever, but my idea of God at the time was a, you know, cruel, punishing type of entity who had told me when I was a teenager, or who the pastor had told me as a teenager, you know, I was going to burn for even the stuff I was thinking.
Wow.
Yeah. And so, you know, I kind of packed that one away and went, no, not following. So I just kind of packed up and moved on from that church and that line of teaching and, you know, just kind of went about my way. I don't think I ever lost the ability to think there's at least something out there in the universe that's running things. You know, I fell into, you know, in my education, higher education, you know, there's a lot of run into a lot of people with secular ideas and, you know, atheists. And so I became kind of agnostic, I guess, at that point, and was that way most of my life. So when I came into, AA and they said, you know, you need to have a God of your understanding, I was like, what does that mean? And they said, well, you know, in AA, we don't have any leaders. We just, you know, our group conscious is based on what we understand from what we all believe is a loving, caring God that wants us to be well and, you know, be happy. And that kind of struck me because it was so contrary to what I had learned as a child, what, you know, the evangelical Lutheran church pastor, Pastor Jensen, had, you know, interpreted for me from the scripture. So I was willing to run with that for a while. And I was also encouraged that, you know, while I developed this relationship with this higher power that I was to define on my own. I was allowed to borrow the strength of my sponsor's higher power, and also to rely on the group as a higher power, because it can be that simple in the beginning. I mean, I was powerless over alcohol. Alcohol was my higher power for a long time, because it called all the shots. And I would do things that I knew were contrary to, you know, good sober thought, because the alcohol demanded it. You know, I had to keep lowering my standards to meet the level I was at to maintain my disease, my alcoholism. So it was easy enough for me to say okay to that. But then it took a long time for me to come to that conclusion of God of my non-understanding, and to actually allow it to work in my life. And working in my life, now that opens up a whole nother kettle of fish, so to speak. Because how do I know God's working in my life? I mean, how do you know God's working in your life, Miss Denise?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. So I can tell by the changes that are happening in me, and also prayers being answered. And of course, not always how I would expect it. Usually winds up being better than like my prayer maybe was thinking, you know? And there are just different times when that I hear something and know something that falls in line with things that are important to me that I've prayed for. For instance, I've shared about my kids on here. I have one kiddo that struggles with some things, and I remember praying years ago to please let me know right away if that kiddo was in trouble, or really any of my kids. It actually works with my grandkids too, and that has been the case, and it's been just really amazing and shows me that that he hears that prayer that I have and that he loves me and my kids, and so that's just been literally a lifesaver. So that's one example. Honestly, there's so many when you get put on the spot when you get asked that. I wanted to just circle back real quick, and I'm going to jump back to this and say that it occurred to me when you shared about borrowing your sponsor's, how did you put it? Borrowing
his,
your sponsor's.
His higher power.
Yeah, his higher power. And about how when we come into recovery, or just as people in general, we'll look to the people around us and look, I mean, I do anyways, look to, oh, like for instance, that person really seems to handle conflict well, or situations that are hard. That really gets my attention. Mm-hmm. I remember a handful of years ago looking at a couple that's in my life and just really noticing how well they speak to each other and how they handle things and how kind they are to people. And I really enjoy being around them and learning from them. And so that's an example of like, as you get to know people and then you kind of start knowing them more, like what is their background? What are their beliefs and things like that? And so, I think it's kind of twofold where I notice that about others. And then I'm curious as to like what their belief system is and how people look at me and wonder, the same thing. Mm-hmm. And so by being conscious and working on how do I show up and how do I interact with people and stuff like that, and just kind of showing that love for others and being patient and forgiving is a pretty big example of how God shows up for me and puts it on my heart that that's important, that he loves all of his people, all of his people. And sometimes that's actually really hard because some of his people are hurting my mm-hmm. people. And so that could be a really hard place, but what keeps me on track is that I may be frustrated for a little while, but I do circle back around to the truth in his word that tells me that I'm to treat others well, like I would like to be treated, and I can pray about it, and I don't have to be alone in those hard things. So those are a couple examples. How does God show up for you?
Well, in a lot of different ways. You know, I share a lot of things in common with you on that. I have been taught that, you know, people who offend me, I've been taught to look at them as though, you know, they are sick people. And so I should treat them as if they were sick people. You know, people that come into the rooms that, you know, mm-hmm. have a desire to stop drinking but haven't quite put the plug in the jug yet. You know, we welcome them in and we understand that they're sick. I mean, just like, would you have a hard time with somebody who had cancer and go, oh, damn you, you know, and your cancer, you can't go out and play golf with me. You know, you can't hang out because you're taking chemo and you could catch a cold and die from it. Mm-hmm. You know, you wouldn't do that.
Right.
You know, so why would you treat somebody with a, you know, substance use disorder, you know, like a person who's lower than or worse than? No, they're just sicker than. Mm-hmm. And you know, and we're taught to pray for those people, you know, even in my program. And it does really work. A friend of mine went through this exercise. I mean, he really had an issue with somebody. I mean, you know, murder was not off the table. Mm-hmm. And his sponsor told him to pray for that person, pray for them to have everything he wanted, mm-hmm. everything he wanted himself for that person, and to do it for 2 weeks. I don't know if that was an arbitrary number or just something he tried, but I've heard it since. And so grudgingly, this fellow went through and did that. And at the end of that two-week period, the person who he had the huge issue with came to him and made a huge amends for his behavior. And, you know, there are so many examples I've seen of that sort of thing happening that lets me know that, yeah, prayers are answered. And like you said, usually not in the way you either would expect them to or hope them to.
Yeah,
you know,
better.
It's like, I was struggling with something. As a matter of fact, it was whether or not I should stay on the board of directors here, because I was struggling with some of the things that I was, you know, required to do. I really didn't think I was capable of doing it, and wasn't sure if I should struggle forward or if it would be more wise just to step back and let somebody more qualified step into that role. And I was just, you know, my ego is in there going, you can do it. And other people are saying, you can do it. And I'm looking at my skill set going, maybe I can do it, but it's going to be awful for a while. I don't know what to do. And it came down to this one point where I was just literally, it was making my head pound. And I told my wife about it. And I said, I got to go lay down for a minute, get rid of this headache and not think about this for a minute. Mm. When I went in my room, I laid down. I was laying down for about a half an hour, just finally relaxing. And my wife says, I have an idea. And she laid it out. And it was like, it was the answer.
Yes.
It was the perfect answer. Not at all what, mm-hmm. nothing I had thought mm-hmm. about had anything to do with it, but it was just the right answer. So, I mean, that was, you know, a more recent way of God speaking to me through someone else, and probably the person I would least expect to hear it from. Mm-hmm. You know, because, I mean, even the people we love will kind of go, ooh, I better let him figure this out on his own. But something
history,
came to
yeah.
her, God gave
yeah.
her an answer,
yeah.
and she shared it with me, and
nice.
It was like, okay.
And she knows you well.
Right, mm-hmm. right. And so it's examples of things like that, you know, those two sort of circumstances mm-hmm. that shows me that a belief in a higher power is one thing, but to really tap into it and to be able to appreciate the capacity of this there, you got to give it a try. Mm-hmm. You got to at least try. And that's kind of what my sponsor originally says. Well, if you're not sure you can believe, can you believe that I believe? And I'm like, well, yeah, you seem to be pretty solid on it. And then he just said, yeah, great. That's all you need to start. You just need to see that somebody else is doing it, and just be accepting of that. And, you know, here we are 29 years later. I think I have a pretty good relationship with God. I don't bother him with the day-to-day. That's my job, you know, to suit up and show up. But when things get hard, I know I can rely on God for an answer or a direction. It's kind of interesting. There's a book out now by a woman, I think her name is Emily Campagno, called Under His Wings. It just came out. But I saw some advanced stuff from it. And it's about people in the military who have found God during times of crisis in the military.
Yeah.
And there was one example where a patrol was pinned down in Vietnam, taking heavy fire. They were going to be most likely overrun. And the lieutenant said, you know, ask God, which way should we go? And he said he clearly heard, go this way. And he took his men, they went that way, and they survived.
Yeah.
So, and there's all kinds of stories like that. And I mean, you don't have to pay attention too hard, you know, to hear people talking about
it. Agreed.
I guess the really hard part, and I know you've experienced this, is, and this tests a lot of people's faith, is what do you do when someone dies way too young? You know?
I know all about that.
That can really shake a belief.
So I've had both in my life, and there's definitely been at least half of the people that have died that I've been close to or been family that have been way too young, like under 32. Mm-hmm. And what I've observed is, in my own experience and what I've observed with others, when people die unexpectedly, first of all, no matter what age they are, if they hadn't been sick or if there hadn't been something that was going on, that's hard because there wasn't really notice. There wasn't like a process of like, oh, you know, Uncle so-and-so is, you know, 70 and they've come down with cancer and they're probably not going to make it stay through the year or something like that. You know, that kind of thing.
Right.
You tried chemo. So like you've had this whole whatever amount of time it could have been, you know, 6 months to a year where you've been hearing that someone's health has been declining. Mm-hmm. And probably even before that, honestly, by the time you're 70, there's things going on.
Right. Trust me.
Yeah. So if it's not a situation like that and it's something pretty abrupt, you know, whether they're 10 or, well, I won't even, let me back up. I'm not going to touch under 18 because I'm not going to speak for that. But if they're adults, if they're young adults, you know, somewhere between 18 and whatever, and they pass abruptly, that's really hard on friends and family. That's really hard. Super unexpected. Very just hard to catch up with in my experience emotionally and things like that. That takes a while.
Yeah.
It really, really does.
Yeah.
If someone's young and is sick, and you've known about it, I feel like that might be. But, you know, when someone takes their life, when someone has a drug overdose, when someone's murdered, when someone dies in a car accident or some kind of other accident, whatever it may look like, that hits kind of hard. And if there's multiple in, say, for instance, I don't know, 3.5 weeks, that's really hard.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. When you talk about when folks get older or somebody, you know, is diagnosed with a terminal disease, I think it's less hard because there's time there for reconciliation.
Yeah.
You know,
right. Get things in order.
It's like my mom was diagnosed with cancer in the beginning of September and passed away in early December, you know, a few days actually, many years ago. Mm-hmm. But at least there was that time for, you know, reconciling anything that needed to be said or had not been said that should have been, you know, that sort of thing. You know, you get that little bit of time to, you know, try and straighten out anything from the past that may, you know.
It gives you a little bit. It's
right.
It gives you more time than the phone call that it's just happened.
Right.
You know, that's just really.
Yeah. And it, it shakes people. I had a close friend who passed away at 28 in my driveway. He lived in the lived in a duplex, and him and his wife lived in the front one. My wife and I were in the back, and a fellow was, it was the morning after Halloween, and this fellow knocked on my door and he goes, "Do you know this man sleeping out in your driveway?" And I'm like, "Oof." And I went out and he was not sleeping. Yeah, and so he had been down a while and there was no point in CPR. Yeah. And that was a really weird instance too. Talk about angels and stuff. I'd never seen this old man who came up to the door before. Never saw him afterwards.
Interesting.
Yeah, so that was a little Twilight Zone action there, but that could be just coincidence. But yeah, and it was sudden and it was unexpected, and you know, it was really tough on everybody. You know, the group of friends were a real tight knit group, and it was really hard on everyone. We found out later that he had had asthma since he was very young and was on like a real strong steroid inhaler. And when you're on a steroid for a long time, it leads to arterial sclerosis, hardening of the arteries. And evidently that's, he had a heart attack from that. There were also other substances in his body. He was a big partier, so there was cocaine, there was amphetamine, but there's also amphetamine in the inhalers, you know, to help open up the airway passages and speed up the blood flow, you know, speed your heart up. So the reality is, you know, he was a walking time bomb probably for the last 5 years, but never knew it. Because, you know, he kept moving, was happy moving.
Which I'm going to throw in a commercial and say, go to the doctor, get your yearly testing. You don't have to be like mine and Johnny's age to have to, you know what I mean? There's just things you should just go. If you, if you're pretty healthy and you don't have to go to the doctor for like colds or whatever, just at least go in once a year, have some blood work done, have somebody look at you.
Yeah.
Get a checkup.
If you have insurance,
it's so worth it.
It doesn't cost anything. And if you don't have insurance,
go to the Chaz.
Submit Chaz. And just, it's good to know where you are so you can try to move forward with it.
Because there can be just some somewhat simple solutions or just maybe a little bit more entailed solutions that could really help your quality of life and the length of it. So it's worth it.
Well, yeah, to prattle on about that just briefly, I had a friend who was suffering some terrible depression, and they had him on, you know, antidepressants and stuff, and he went in and had a physical done, and they did blood work, and they found out that his vitamin B level, or D, which was it? I think D.
D has to do with the sun and can really affect your energy, although B is pretty important as well.
Yeah. It was super low on that, and they put him on like a mega supplement for it, and he was off of the antidepressants in like 3 months.
Actually, I have heard that before.
Was a vitamin deficiency that was wearing him down. And
and that stuff, simple kinds of like blood work can show you. Honestly, in our area, well, we're in Idaho. In our area here, we don't get a whole lot of sunlight. And so really everyone.
We're down to less than 9 hours.
Yeah, everybody can use quite a bit. I'm not going to give out any numbers because I'm not a doctor, but I know that, and I need to remind myself to get back on that again. I forget sometimes, but when I do, it's a pretty good amount, honestly, because we're just low.
Yeah.
And I noticed that it really does help my family. Yeah. So,
Yeah, we're above the 45th parallel. So,
And so we're pretty much all depleted.
According to my doctor, everybody's depleted. Vitamin D on
So. I've heard too. And so, and you can be like so low that it's that situation like you were talking about where it actually seems like depression. And I'll also throw out there that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, substance use disorder, people struggle with alcohol, all of that kind of stuff. Those kinds of things can deplete your body from nutrients that are super essential. Would you agree?
Right. No,
I mean, that was my experience from back then.
I took all my calories basically through alcohol.
True. And, my stuff didn't have calories.
Yeah, when I quit drinking, I lost like 40 pounds in a matter of like 8 months. I mean, just went away, you know. Of course, I was more active. I wasn't just sitting around getting drunk, of course. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that's your health tip for today.
Yep, brought to you by Johnny and Denise.
Denise.
From the Lakeshore Recovery Center, Recovery Radio, yada, yada.
We are not doctors, but we watch a lot of Saint Elsewhere. So. Anyway, so we go back to higher power and God and trusting and one of the kind of annoying pressures that comes on me from having a higher power is the way I have to behave. And it has to do with the fact that it would be really tough to talk with somebody like a sponsee and try and, well, not sell them, but show them how this higher power can work if I'm being a total D-bag, you know?
Right, it goes back to that looking to somebody for what they have and what they're exampling.
Right.
And people are going to, I would assume, gravitate towards someone who has the things going on. Sorry to cut you off.
Right, and you know, showing that belief in God is important and how it works. Yeah, you have to be exemplary of that. Does that mean I'm like perfect? No. But that can be, you know,
that would be exhausting.
and impossible.
Yep.
You know, there's only one guy that was perfect, and I think they nailed him to a tree a couple thousand years ago. Yes. Yeah.
But that's okay. That was the plan, though.
Yeah.
It was the plan. It wouldn't have happened if it wasn't God's plan.
So I just
want to be clear on that.
That's right. Even though he said, "Why have you forsaken me?"
That's taken a little out of context, though, actually. We could dive into that sometime if you want.
Someday. So anyway, that can be really tough. And you do have to understand that, my character defects do flare up from time to time. One of the big things we do in AA is we do an inventory so we can sort out and find out what those defects are, and then we ask our higher power to remove them. And that, you know, is very helpful, but occasionally I will grab them back, and not necessarily intentionally, but sometimes you get into situations where you need to act spontaneously, and if the only tool in your toolbox is a hammer, everything's a nail, and that's not necessarily, you know, the way you want to approach something. You may need a screwdriver,
that's what community is for,
right? Exactly.
Yeah.
But when the only experience you've ever had with a certain kind of situation is to go at it with a hammer, then that's when my defects will pop up.
Yeah.
You know, especially, you know, when anger hits me, I want to get loud, you know, and that's not a way to diffuse anger. That'll just accelerate it. We talk about it a lot, and it's in the big book. And it says when we're in a situation like that where we're getting angry or confused, we pause. And, we ask for the right answer. And that can be difficult in the heat of a moment. Mm-hmm. Like if you're trying to argue a point with somebody in a civil way and it gets heated, pausing just briefly will give me just a moment to think about, well, where am I going with this?
Right. Let another part of your brain work for a second,
right.
too.
Do I just say okay and walk away? And, you know, is it worth it to, you know, get louder and louder? You know, is anything being resolved other than my ego getting stroked for, you know, responding? Like the big tough guy I am, or is it wiser just to back off? And that pause allows my higher power to kind of take over the situation and say, no, this is not worth it. Just yeah. walk away.
And the more that you do that, the more you're likely to make that happen the next time.
Right.
And it also reminds me that, like, you having other people in your life that you allow to speak into that, they can be like, hey, well, we could talk about that. Like, what's going on? You know?
Right.
Having people around you that, like, are good influences and that have your permission to come to you and say, hey, I care about you. Like, what's going on?
Right.
That can be really helpful, too.
Yeah, yeah. And again,
and
you know,
if you have that because you go to meetings and you do different, and you have friends and, you know.
Right. Yeah. And you have the fellowship of your church mm-hmm. and the guiding principles there and yeah. your women's group that yeah. you can rely on for things yeah. like that.
And a lot of times I'm just like, hey, so-and-so, I'm just freaking out.
Right.
I'll call it out on myself, like, will you pray with me because I think I'm losing my, I can't say that word, but yeah, right. I think I'm losing it. Yeah.
Yeah. Right, right.
Yeah, I feel like I actually do that at work even with my coworkers. I can grab one of them and, yep, and my ladies that I'm friends with and church. And it's pretty much important that wherever I am that I have that ability to pretty much grab somebody and be like, hey, can I talk to you about something? I may not be okay. Or just, hey, I need to talk to you.
Right, yeah. right. Yeah, no, and that's...
Because a lot of times there's a fear underneath that anger.
Oh, yeah.
And anger actually... there's some stuff with like how it gives you certain kinds of energy, and I forget what the chemical is that gets pushed
endorphins.
With anger, yeah, specifically.
No, adrenaline.
Yeah, adrenaline, which can make you feel better. It makes you feel more empowered when you're angry because mm-hmm. it can, I won't say all the time, but it can come from fear, mm-hmm. you know, so the anger kind of, yeah. So there's yeah. a lot of different kinds of...
Well, you get that fight or flight,
yeah.
you know,
there's a lot of different
reaction.
Kinds of chemicals that happen too.
Yeah.
That's why calming down for a minute.
Right, right. Taking that pause, taking a breath.
Yes, so that doesn't keep pumping. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you know, when I don't have people around in a yeah. situation like that, that's where I've really learned to rely on my higher power. Okay, God, what do I do?
He's always listening to you.
And it's never my first thought mm-hmm. of what I should do. I never trust my first thought. Wait for the second thought, and then the first action will be right. Mm-hmm. I know it sounds crazy, but you know it works well for me.
Yeah.
You know, because you know I don't have all the answers, and if I did, they'd probably nail me to a tree too, because no one would believe.
I mean,
it.
That's a big responsibility. I feel like that would just be all consuming all day long. So.
Right.
And we'd need some rest. If you knew everything, Johnny, you'd be really very tired.
Right. Yeah.
You don't want to know everything.
I'm happy just to be a drunk among drunks, you know, to be able to relate to people and show them that maybe there's just a little better way out yeah. there. And that's part of that responsibility. You know, our 12th step in AA says that, you know, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of working the steps, we try to carry this message to other alcoholics and then practice these principles in all our affairs. So there is an obligation there for me to behave as if I have a higher power and that it works in my life. Fortunately, I don't have to behave as if because I do have a relationship with the God of my non-understanding who I trust to walk with me through things that are hard and to be there when things are good too. Mm-hmm. See, that's was something I never understood. Why do we sing songs of praise in church, you know? It's like, well, it's you need to be thankful when things are good too, mm-hmm. you know?
Exactly.
How many times did I pray, God, if you just get me out of this, just this one time,
yeah,
I'll never
still,
do it.
And we still manage to whine, but that's okay.
Yeah, yeah, but we, you know, we get better. We move on
it's
from
okay
that.
To whine every now and then. It's all right.
That's right. That's right. Nothing like a good whine.
you know, just a little bickering.
Well, we were talking earlier about how sometimes, you know, you see something clearly and the boss doesn't necessarily find it as important as you do in a given situation. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, when we talked about it, it seemed obvious to me that it's not It's not that they don't care. It's that they are looking at it from a completely different perspective. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, like when I pray to God for an answer about something, the answer comes and it's so contrary to what I would have thought that it's like, it's well, that doesn't make any sense, but okay.
Yeah.
You know, and then later on, it's, you know, that I have the gift of being able to look at things in retrospect to be able to understand them.
Yeah.
And that's a great thing. I mean, I'd love to understand it right now, but if I can look back and go, oh, that's why, it makes me a little bit more willing to have faith that it will, things will work out however they're supposed to.
So important to be able to point back to those things.
Yeah.
Yeah, because then when we're in things we don't understand, or it just seems like it's not going to be okay, to have things that we really remember that we can look back at and point to and just be like, okay, remember this.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That just brings so much hope.
That wasn't a test. It was a lesson.
Yeah, it just brings so much hope. Well, and that is kind of the thing. I mean, we are really learning, I think. Yes, I do get to learn during, like, good times, but I do really learn a lot of valuable things during hard times.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, I think I may have shared this before. I remember one time being at Gripman, and I didn't really need to do anything yet to reach out to anybody. But I felt like it was like, here I am standing. I'm standing strong. And I've got all of my, like, friends lined up next to me. You know what I mean? And I know that I can make the call and tap them in at any point in time that I need to do whatever I need. You know what I mean? Because like, we've been here before, like, we've done hard things, and I've been able to reach out, and they're just like, what do you need? You know, or they like make a decision for what I need. Cause sometimes you don't know what you need.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just a standard, there's just a standard handful of things that we can do for each other in a situation where someone's going through something hard. And when it's modeled to you so well, it's really easy to then also do that.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I think that how much we can influence people by our example actually is a lot more than I think we know.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I mean, I don't notice some of the things that sometimes people say. And I think I notice so many helpful things from people that I know, and they probably don't notice, you know? Because it's not what we're thinking about, but it really is important.
Right, right. And that's why the, you know, it, the concept of fellowship is so important. I can be sitting in a meeting, you know, listening to someone share. And, you know, quite often it seems like it's the person's like, oh, God, I've heard this person share the same thing a million times. And so I'm kind of half listening. Then all of a sudden they'll say something that a little light goes off in my head. And it's like, oh.
Click.
Oh, wait. You know, how many times have I heard this and never seen that that directly applies to X, Y, or Z that I'm doing?
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, that even the village idiot, you know, has something to contribute. And, you know, I'm lucky I'm the village idiot.
No, you're not. That is incorrect.
Yeah, self-deprecation. And all
that. Knock it off.
Hey, speaking of
not
self,
on my watch.
self-deprecating, we got time to self-deprecate ourselves out of here. So thanks, Denise.
Thanks, Johnny.
Good shares today. I hope somebody gets something out of it. I did. So I'll close it off with the usual. You know, if you think you have a problem with substances or behavioral health issues, you do.